The content of this podcast is based on medical fact and evidence-based practice from credible authoritative sources, but is not a substitute for your institution's policies, procedures, common sense, or good judgment. The views and opinions are those of Eric Bauer and FlightBridge Ed in their entirety. This is the FlightBridge Ed Podcast, critical care and emergency medicine education for nurses and paramedics. Here's your host, Eric Bauer.
Hey guys, Mike Verkest back with the FlightBridge Ed Podcast, along with my brother Eric Bauer. How's it going, buddy?
Hey, doing good. Having a great AMTC.
Yeah, it's been going great. We are joined by Dr. Mike Hudson, who is a practicing ER physician and the medical director for Classic Air Medical for about 10 years now. How you doing, Doc?
I'm doing great. I'm so happy to be here and honored to talk with you guys.
Well, it's great to have you. So tell us a little bit about your background, where you're from, all what you're doing, and all that kind of stuff.
Sure. So I kind of started out life in medicine as an EMT and sort of morphed into an ER doc, went to medical school residency, and then stayed on as an attending down at the U of A in Tucson.
Awesome.
While I was there.
Go Cats, right?
What's that? Yeah, go Cats. Thank you very much. Yep, still love them.
I'll give you that one.
Thanks, I appreciate it. Well, it's because they're the best, you sort of have to. that's where I met your buddy Dave Olvera and sort of learned about you guys and your podcast. And, I was telling Eric yesterday that, I encourage all of my flight crews to listen to you guys. I think your resource is amazing. And so it's been an honor getting to meet you guys and talk with you.
Awesome.
Getting back to me, I started a sim lab in Tucson when I was there, and that program continues on much better than the way that I left it. They've done some really great things, and got started in EMS there with my mentor Terry Valenzuela with the Tucson Fire Department, and then from there moved up to Flagstaff and got into the air medical industry there with Classic Air Medical.
Awesome.
Nice.
Yeah. Well, again, we appreciate you swinging by here. We were talking yesterday over it because the part of the competition is taking place in your guys' mobile training unit, which is
phenomenal.
Phenomenal,
oh,
by the
thanks.
Way.
Thanks. That was a big coup for me. I've been fighting for years for us to be able to get that resource. One of the difficulties that I face with having 14 bases all over the Rocky Mountains is how to effectively train people.
Absolutely.
And getting that simulation trailer has just been huge. And I love the fidelity. We're just talking today about getting some airbags in there so we can make it shake while people are doing
I was wondering about that. That would really kick it up a notch, wouldn't it?
I think that and some really scary ambient noise.
Yeah.
I think those are my two next goals for that trailer.
So maybe real quick for the people that are listening that don't really have any idea of what we're talking about. Tell us a little bit about that sim lab. What is the, like, how's it set up?
Yeah.
Just tell us a little bit about it.
So it's essentially a big toy hauler, and the front part of the toy hauler is an exact replica of a Bell 407, literally using parts from a Bell 407. Interesting tidbit about that is the guy that helped design and build it used to work on the Discovery Channel show Bitchin' Rides. He's
now
one of our chief pilots. So we had this great inside builder that helped us make that. So the front's a Bell 407. Looks just like it, feels just like it, smells just like it after this competition. It's a little hot and sweaty in there. And then the back part is sort of an ER room, and so we're able to do a lot of joint training. We'll wheel that thing up to an ER and start the patient out in the ER with their staff, and then move them to our staff so that we kind of all get joint sim training.
Yeah, that is just phenomenal.
Thank you.
Such a great resource, and so cool that they're using it here as part of the competition. And
a
great outreach tool for people. And
it's a blast. I love it. I mean, my heart definitely still lies with simulation, and stressing people out in a high risk, low occurrence situation is
so
the way
good.
To train.
Absolutely. So as part of that discussion, we were sort of talking about, I think somebody posed a question about C collars.
Yeah.
Right. So we've had the conversation until we were blue in the face about backboards and Canadian C-spine rules and selective spinal mobilization, blah, blah, blah. But there hasn't been a lot of movement, like nationally, for some reason, about the use of C-collars. So I know that was an interest of yours. You've done some work in that. So tell us a little bit about maybe what's happening from your perspective in that regard.
Yeah, so it's been a slow-moving process just because we live in such a litigious society. The folks that have been able to make great advances in that are overseas, where they don't have as many lawyers, apparently, as we do. And so I became interested in it several years ago, talking actually with Min LeKong, one of the other great podcasts.
Absolutely.
And so the Royal Flying Docs have done away with hard collars many years years ago, and looking at their research, and they've actually gotten some of their neurosurgeons to write position statements saying, hey, we support the use of soft cervical collars because clearly the harm outweighs any benefit. As I spoke with them, I began looking into the issue, and sure enough, as we started to talk briefly about earlier, it looks like all of this madness started back in 1966. There was a single retrospective chart review study of about 1,000 patients looking at folks that were brought into the hospital with a cord injury, and out of those 1,000 patients, about 30 of them ended having a secondary neurologic injury. They made a huge sort of a leap without much data saying that those patients may have developed their secondary injury from quote-unquote rough handling. Uh-huh. And so that's sort of where all of this madness has come from. There's never really been anything to validate that ever, and we've just been doing it for 50, 60 years
that's
now.
That's the way we've always done it,
exactly,
right?
Exactly, because dogma has prevailed, which it shouldn't. We looked at that, and I sort of tried to break it down, and there's been a lot of great papers and a lot of smarter people than me that have done that before, and so it kind of boils down to, you know, number one, we think that secondary, that movement of a patient after the initial injury causes the secondary injury. Number two, we think that hard collars completely immobilize the spine and therefore prevent any secondary injury. And number three, we think it's completely safe, and so we should do it to everybody that moves that's ever been in any kind of a fall. And so we've had to sort of look at how do we dispel each of those myths in each of those three arenas. And there's been a fair amount of studies dispelling each of those three myths. However, there's never been a great RCT, unfortunately, and that's kind of what everybody's been waiting for.
Right.
I'm in sort of a unique position with my organization where I'm not hospital affiliated, and it's sort of me sticking my neck out when I want to. And
yeah.
So I decided to stick my neck out, and we switched to all soft collars about a year ago,
okay.
A year and a half ago.
And so what has been... What have you found? What's been the...
So far, no harm. We have just are presenting a poster at NAEMSP.
Uh-huh.
Basically, so far, we've done a comfort study where I got a bunch of my, quote, volunteers, which were my flight medics, and during subsequent lectures, half of them wore a hard collar, the other half to soft collar, and then switched during the next lecture. And we found that just during that half-hour lecture, those guys that were in the hard collars were already getting skin breakdown, and these are healthy volunteers
really?
Sitting
wow.
upright, not on a spine board, you know, and they were miserable. So we've started out sort of softly, if you will, forgive the pun, with that, and we're moving into now a do no harm study where we're going to, and if anybody out there wants to be part of it, we want to look at as many receiving facilities as we can, looking at their trauma data and confirming, hopefully, that the patients that we and anybody else who's interested bring in soft collars have exactly the same morbidity and mortality as those patients that were brought in hard collars. And my hypothesis is that it'll be the same, that everybody's going to do fine. Probably from a morbidity standpoint, they're going to do way better. Hard collars just cause so many functional problems with our patients, you know, skin breakdown. There's cadaveric studies showing that people that cadavers that have an induced fracture, when you put a hard collar on them, that fracture is actually distracted by as much as 7 millimeters.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's, I mean, it really does a lot of damage. There's, you know.
I think intuitively, I feel like we know that, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there couldn't be anything good coming from the hard collar.
No.
Right?
It's, we look at it, we know it sucks, but we're all afraid of getting sued.
Yeah.
And to be honest, that's a fair fear, because if we do have one patient that's got a significant neurologic deficit, you know, I'm going to be in trouble.
Yeah,
but
for sure.
I'm confident enough in the data that I think it's worth taking the risk and hopefully advancing the specialty a little bit to, you know, for the betterment of all of our patients.
So that means you're also not using long backboards.
Correct, yeah. Our company guideline states basically to use the backboard only as a transport tool to get a patient that needs it from the scene to the helicopter, and then they're off the backboard.
Okay.
So we don't carry them. We, you know, we use them, you know, from ground EMS and
sure.
use them as a transport device only.
So for those listeners out there, this is always a hot topic, and wherever I travel, I can pretty much pinpoint the areas of the country that have gone along with what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're really one of the first places I've heard of that are using soft collars. It's definitely something we see in Europe, Australia, Asia.
Correct.
And there seem to be, I think, loved how you said they're less sue happy. It seems
yeah.
like things just seem smoother.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And they're so far ahead of us.
Oh, they are.
Because they don't worry about the small little thing.
Absolutely.
You know, they do their research, and they definitely make sure that things are done correctly, but they don't
yeah.
sweat those small things. And so traveling around, you still see pockets. In the area I live, if we were to walk into a hospital and transfer a patient, even though maybe the physician that's transferring says to me, this patient's being transferred to a level 1 facility, we've cleared the C-spine. Mm-hmm. If we don't reboard them and recollar them, yeah. and we show up to Vanderbilt mm-hmm. or University of Kentucky, it's not going to be good.
Yeah.
Right? So you always reboard those patients.
Absolutely.
So what advice can you give? Obviously, our podcast, I feel, is a platform not only yeah. for education, but for change.
Yeah.
Right? And there's a lot of medical directors like you that I'm so thankful for that is open-minded and listens to, you know, this old paramedic.
Yeah. Because there are a lot of medical directors yeah. that listen to this. Yeah. We just heard from a couple yesterday.
Absolutely. So what advice could you give to what have you done in your area? Do you have that problem? Do you have yeah. the trauma centers on board?
Yes. No, I do not have the trauma centers on board. We definitely have that problem. What I did initially is I created a pamphlet with a list of references, and I'll give you guys that for your show notes later.
Great.
All the studies showing why hard collars cause harm and sort of why we're doing what we're doing. About 6 months prior to initiation of this guideline, we flooded the market with those pamphlets so that our guys wouldn't just be showing up and getting ambushed, you know, with these angry trauma surgeons
sure.
wondering why the heck we were doing what we were doing. I think that helped a little bit. What I've noticed in my time as medical director is that one of the things that we provide in HEMS is a culture change. And so when we fly into anywhere like a small hospital, we switch our patients to ketamine. And at first, when we fly into those places and switch our patients from their, from their Versed drip to our ketamine drip, or from their propofol drip to our ketamine drip, they think we're mad. They think ketamine's going to make their
right.
patients' heads explode. But over a year period or a two-year period, we change the culture. They start to
yeah.
read up on it, and the culture starts to shift. My hope and my experience with this kind of stuff is that that's what's going to happen at our receiving facilities, is that now that we've taken this step to start putting our patients just in a soft collar, we're getting questions. I just was talking to a crew yesterday that brought a patient into an unnamed level 1 trauma center, and the whole receiving team was like, oh, that's so cool, you guys are putting your patients in soft collars, this is awesome, this is clearly what we need to be doing. And then the trauma surgeon walked in and said, what the hell is that, and put
right.
it in a hard collar.
Right.
So that people know that culture change is happening, and it's just going to take time. So basically, I think the nutshell is to kind of play the long game. You know, you have to change culture. It doesn't happen overnight. You can present people with the 30 plus studies showing harm from hard cervical collars, and they're still going to say, yeah, but what about that one patient? And
yeah.
you know, so it's difficult, but it's a culture shift. That's what we have
to
do.
So then, what's the benefit of this? So physiologically, anatomically, so the soft collar isn't going to keep them from moving.
Right.
The soft collar isn't. Is it more of just the reminder
yeah.
to not move, or for the crew to be like, hey, keep an eye on this, because really, mm-hmm. It's not much more than having nothing on there, right?
You're 100% on the right on the mark. So, first of all, neither does a hard collar. When you look at the evidence, for hard collars, it allows 30 degrees of movement. Which, if you believed that you could get a secondary injury from movement, then a hard collar still isn't doing anything. The soft collars don't prevent any movement whatsoever. They act as a placeholder and a reminder. So, in the awake traumatized patient, they remind them not to move their neck around a lot. They remind the ER doc when they show up, especially by virtue of the bright sticker, which I totally stole from the European guys, that says C-collar not clear.
Oh.
It reminds the receiving crew that they still need to, handle this patient with kid gloves, they still need to move them carefully, and they still need to have their due diligence before they let the patient move their neck around. So purely a placeholder and some signage. I think my hope is that at some point that we'll just completely move away from having a collar at all. I think we needed an intermediary step, because I don't think that anybody's
ready to make that leap.
That huge leap, yeah. Yeah, totally. I think I'm ready to make that leap, but I don't think my receiving hospitals are. So.
Very, very cool. Have you had any situations where the flight crews have arrived at a receiving facility and the trauma surgeon has called you upset, or you know?
Yes. Yeah. And so I'm a really, really hands-on medical director, and all my flight crews have my cell phone number on their phones. And so, and I encourage, you know, that's my job, is if there's an angry physician or somebody has a question, they call me directly.
Sure.
And I've had that happen a couple of times, and I've, you know, had this conversation with them that, you know, here's the evidence. This is why we're doing this. It's not because they're uneducated or, you know, that they're being malicious. It's because they're actually doing the best thing for your patient. And this is why we've chosen to do that.
Yeah.
And sometimes have to agree to disagree.
Absolutely. Yeah. That now is happening more times than not. But, you know, again, I think with the FOMED movement, with podcasts like this to kind of spread the gospel. I mean, we saw the same thing with ketamine over the last 10 years, right?
Absolutely.
People thought that was killing people and you should never use it in head injuries. And now we see that, it, you know, it's actually quite safe and probably beneficial in head injuries. So,
yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, very cool. Very cool. I've actually wanted to talk about this topic for a long time.
Yeah.
I mean, it comes up constantly.
Yeah.
So excited to be able to talk about it and have, you know, you as an expert come on here. I think the listeners will enjoy that. And this is always a topic that comes up in all of our classes. So appreciate it.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. And, you know, I'll give you my contact info. I think Dave probably already has it. And I'll give you that list of references. If anybody out there is interested in getting this information, I'd love to share that with you. Love to share my guidelines with you. You know, would love if anybody wants to stick out their neck with me and be part of this Do No Harm study. The more participants that I have, the higher the power and the better the quality of the study is going to be.
Absolutely.
Obviously, I can't do an RCT with this, but I can do the next best thing and, you know, do a high quality retrospective study.
So if somebody wanted to get a hold of you, how can they reach out to you?
So my email is mhudson@classicairmedical.com.
Okay. Awesome. Okay.
We'll put that in the show notes as well.
Great. Thank you guys very much for having me. It was a pleasure to talk with you.
Absolutely. We appreciate you swinging by, and I think on behalf of Eric Bauer, Dr. Hudson, Mike Verkest, you've been listening to the Flight Bridgehead podcast. We appreciate your support, and we will talk to you guys soon. Thanks.
This has been a production of the Flight Bridgehead podcast, leading the way in pre-hospital critical care and emergency medicine education.